Did you know that around the world, 68.5 million individuals have been forcibly displaced as a result of persecution, conflict, violence, or human rights violations? We are now witnessing the highest levels of displacement on record.
Today on Real Family Talk, meet a pastor whose church is actively ministering to refugees in their community and making a difference in the lives of 40 families. Join us.
Today, we're talking about refugees. We are facing a worldwide displacement that is affecting millions of people globally. In fact, one person becomes displaced every 2 seconds. That's 30 people who are newly displaced every single minute.
This is a big challenge that needs to be addressed. But as people of faith, there are many opportunities to minister to the needs of the individuals who are facing such dire situations. These days, you don't have to travel around the world to find them. Pastor Joseph Capaz leads a refugee initiative that is helping 40 refugees' families right in his community. Welcome, Pastor Capaz.
It's good to be here.
Tell us about the refugee program that you're involved in. What's happening? What are you doing? And who are these families?
Yeah, so we realized that there were a number of families in our community, refugees, that were here from being replaced, or rather they were displaced and being resettled here. And as a result of that, they had some needs that we became aware of. And so we partnered with the Potomac Conference. Sligo Church also partnered with Washington Adventist University, also with Adventist Community Services, ADRA, a number of organizations we've been able
that's
to partner with.
Like, yeah.
And I think that's a key principle, is that you don't have to reinvent the wheel sometimes, that you can partner with other organizations to help a real need. So we've been able to help 40 families, about 240
wow.
individuals.
That's amazing, 40 families.
That. Yeah.
And that's a lot of people.
Yeah. Where are most of these families from? What countries are they
from? Yeah. So the families that we've been helping have been primarily from Syria, but we've also helped families from Afghanistan, from Yemen as well, and from other parts of the world.
What are some of their specific needs, and how is the church helping them?
Yeah. So, you know, I've learned so much through this process, and sometimes I found myself seeing their needs only in economic terms.
Yes.
And sometimes we define poverty only economically. And so one of the greatest needs that we found wasn't so much the material things that they needed, even though they needed those things, but it went beyond that. It went beyond that in the terms of them wanting relationships with us.
Okay, so it was much more than just material needs.
Yes, yeah it was.
So their situation did not change their humanity, did not change
yeah.
their human need for a relationship, is what
yes.
you're saying. And so how would they articulate this? And what are they saying are their specific needs that they would want from people,
yeah.
aside from money and
yeah.
clothes?
Yeah, so, you know, hearing their story and just having the chance to sit down with them, we realized that they left a life that they loved.
Indeed.
They left families. Family members were killed in the process. And so just this total separation from what they knew was even traumatic for them. And so when they've come here, they're looking for those connections. And I asked them, what was the greatest fear coming here to the United States? And they said it was the language barrier. Language
yeah.
was, you know, being able to communicate
yeah.
was huge for them. So being able to have compassion and just listen to their story, develop that connection, and just let them know that there are people that care about them, which was huge.
So why is it important to minister to them? And what are some of those needs that are being met, even though they may not join the church?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that, because we can see people that are being resettled here with skepticism. Mm-hmm. And being able to see them, just that we share so much in familiarity with them, in the sense that we are all broken people.
Yeah.
human beings
in need of
friendship.
That I need, I'm just as poor as the refugee socially. I'm just as broken. That I need God's grace in my life. And it's through the riches of God's grace that He's poured upon me that has allowed me to minister out of the grace that God has shown me. And so that can create a connection, realizing that I'm just as broken and they need that same compassion that, that God has shown me.
What an amazing story.
Yeah. So have you created a training program for your members? How do your members get involved in this? Because you mentioned the skepticism that we have, you know, in certain places and communities about refugees coming into the community and all of the negative press surrounding that.
Yeah.
How do you train people to work with the refugees so that they feel welcome.
Right. Yeah, and that's an important aspect of it. You know, there's cultural differences, but we're blessed at Sligo Church to have a diverse congregation. And some of the members in our congregation were immigrants themselves, and so they know what it's like.
Also, it's a lot easier to deal with people who have some kind of connection, some kind of similar experience. Yes.
Yeah. And some other church members are actually from the Middle East that we have, so they were able to translate.
Okay. Excellent.
But also, we just have a very compassionate congregation and that is very aware of the needs in the community. So at Sligo Church, we always say we have to go beyond the walls, that we have to reach the community. So that mindset is already there. And so before we go out, we do have some things that we share with those that go out that talk about how do you greet somebody. You know, typically you wouldn't shake a woman's hand, even though that might be seen as rude for us. It's just culturally respecting them. Also, there are times when we take our shoes off because they will use the carpet as a prayer mat sometimes. So we want to be aware of that as well. And so it's through that, you know, taking photos, we try to be sensitive to that as well when we're there.
So what I'm hearing you say is that before your members get involved in helping, that they need to understand some of the social mores of these groups so that they're not offensive and they're not put off by the people who are coming because they're coming into a new place. Again, you're talking about language, but we're also talking about difference. And how do we manage difference so that we are not creating a bigger gulf, but in fact, creating connections and getting closer to them and being able to minister to them.
Absolutely. And I think that's huge because we do have a congregation that is different and we're ministering to a people that are different. But in the world, I think we use our differences to divide ourselves, but also our differences can strengthen us. And if we just see that differences can strengthen us as humanity, part of being human is being humane.
Absolutely.
And being able to share that humane side of us that God has poured into us can just create a better place in this world. And the church can be the greatest vehicle that God can use to bring restoration and healing in this place.
Powerful. That is so powerful. We'll talk more about ministry to refugees next. Stay with us.
Welcome back. Today on Real Family Talk, we're talking about ministering to refugees. Joining us now is Hannah Koipale. Hannah, you're part of this ministry, and tell us about how you are involved. What exactly are you doing?
Okay, I am involved in getting the apartments ready prior to the refugees coming. Not only refugees, but asylum seekers.
Okay.
And once the State Department approves these people, there are two agencies in downtown Silver Spring, which are nonprofit organizations, that inform a non-denominational church in D.C., and they are the ones who have gotten involved in this. I happened to be having lunch with in a friend's home, and my very close friend, Svinita Suri, had mentioned that her daughter is involved in this ministry of setting up homes for refugees. I retired a few years ago, and I thought, okay, I'm still young to get involved in helping others. So I contacted her, and I joined her group. And before, we don't meet the refugees. We just get the apartment all ready with sofas, tables, chairs, cutlery, everything that an apartment needs, beds, yes, everything that an apartment needs, so that when the family comes in, it's a very warm feeling.
Okay. So what is it that you do specifically? Because there was a recent article in the Visitor magazine that said that you make it welcoming for them. So is there anything specific that you do to make the family feel welcome?
Well, just gathering items that would help them feel at home, if we can, something that relates to their country, if it's possible, tablecloth or, you know, something, or we leave picture frames so they have places that they can put their family pictures, because a lot of them have left a lot of family back home and they would like to continue to remember them in these apartments. So I have actually extended to contact my family members, my husband's side, and collecting plates and dishes, and none of us have any assigned
function
to do a specific thing. When we come into an apartment, we see that the dishes have to be washed and cleaned up and put in the shelves. Whoever sees it does it, or the beds have to be put together, or the table has to be put together and the tablecloth.
So it sounds like you have a dynamic ministry.
Yes, we're actually like a human body. Each one of us are like the arms, eyes. We don't work. We work, do things independently, but we all harmonize. And at the end, in some of the pictures, you'll see how beautiful that the apartments look once they have been set up.
What an amazing ministry, trying to make it better for people who are running away from war, leaving family, leaving brokenness. Perhaps some of their members, family members, have died, have been killed.
Yes.
And so we're talking about individuals who really need to feel the warmth, the human warmth and concern of others as they're coming to a new country and a new place.
Exactly. And the thing is, one of the ladies who volunteers, her daughter's class prepares beautiful little hearts with messages written on it and placed on the beds of the pillows of these little kids that are going to be coming and occupying that place.
Wonderful.
And another child has the lady who leads our volunteer group, her children designed a T-shirt which states on it, "Home has no borders," and they have the nine flags of the refugee flags, and they have it shown as a living room, one of the flags being the couch and a carpet and a lamp, and just as we set up apartments for refugees.
Wow. I think that's so powerful, because Pastor was just saying that we need to think about the refugees just like we would think about ourselves and our own families. And so here you're saying you don't meet these families.
No, we don't.
But don't you hear, like, there's all this love and so much warmth that goes into, as if you're setting it up for your own family. So what difference do you think that makes for these families? Have you experienced this when they come into their new homes and apartments?
Yeah, I think it makes a tremendous difference. Firstly, they've just left the home, and now they're not just coming to a house. The way Hannah prepares it, they're coming into a home again. And I think that's so important. As soon as they walk into that room, they feel at least there's some familiarity with what they had back home, because they're so intentional. And I think they're more sensitive to that when they come into a new place. And so it's been able to start a conversation and develop friendships. And Hannah has also had the opportunity to meet the family she's set up these homes for. And it's just seeing that interaction for the first time is so special. They'll run up, give her a hug, thank her so much for what she has done for them.
That's so basically beautiful. You're doing the work of Jesus. You know, you're being the hands and the eyes and the ears and the heart of Jesus.
Yes. I mean, we don't get an opportunity to tell them about God, but I think our actions would speak.
You are living the Christ. You are living out his ministry, right? Mm-hmm. His principles. So what can others do to help you guys continue in this ministry? Like, people who are watching this, what is needed to continue in this ministry?
We can use a lot of household items. I know that there has been some cutbacks to the number of refugees that may be coming, but the ones that are already here, they do have an ongoing list of items that they may need. And that is sometimes passed on to the leader of our group, who then relies on us or maybe family or friends to help donate these items to provide to them. We have things like tables, sofas, plates, dishes, tablecloths, bedspreads, sheets,
pillows.
Where
would you send them? Is there an address? Is there a website they can go and get this information from?
Yes, well, I could give my email address that they could send me an email. We usually go and pick up these items if they can tell us where they're located.
So you pick it up from the homes of
people? From their home, yes. All of us volunteers who work, who volunteer with this, most of us are all women except for one young man. He's the only man. But these ladies are very powerful. They carry sofas up the stairs. So I can give my email, which is H.
Well, of course, we're talking about the Washington, D.C. area.
Yes,
because
Washington.
This program is seen around the world, and
we need people
to know where it's contextualized.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So we're in the Washington, D.C. area, and you're willing to give out your email address so that people can contact you.
And there is also the Sligo Church website, sligochurch.org, and there is an interest form. If someone is interested in helping, they can fill out that interest form, and we'll get that communication and be in contact
with them
as well.
Excellent. And I'm sure we'll put it up on the screen afterwards, and it'll be on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about ministering to refugees. Next, we'll meet another member of this dynamic team.
Pastor Joseph Cabaz and a team are helping refugees adjust to life in a new land. Ross Patterson is also a part of the team. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your involvement in this team and why you got involved.
My involvement. Well, it started with Hannah meeting me at church and saying, Ross, do you know anybody that can help move some furniture or some sofas? And, naturally, people don't like to help other people move. And I was like, okay, what is this about? What is it for? And so she kind of told me a little bit about it. I was like, well, how did you get involved with this? What's this all about? She ended up calling me, and sure enough, she was at my doorstep, because I had a couch that I wanted to donate. And so, I ended up, helping her get the couch in there. We go to the house and, we drop it down there. And she's like, well, we do this every week. And I was like, okay, my Sundays, that's my time to kind of do, my stuff. And so I started to go more often with her, and then more young adults started to become involved. And so it started to become a part of my Sunday, in the morning we would, get this done. And then she asked me, do you want to help, furnish a little bit? And I was like, I do have some free time and Monday morning. And so we started to do that also. So that's how I kind of started to get involved with this ministry.
It almost sounds like, stone soup?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know the story, the guy who needed to get some soup, and he says, well, I have a few stones here. You have a little celery, a little tomatoes I can add to it, spice up the stone soup. It looks like you got pulled into a stone soup.
I got pulled in, but I loved it.
That's wonderful. So what has it been like for you getting to know these families? Because we hear that you've gotten to know them and even become friends with some of the families. Mm-hmm. What has that experience been like for you?
It's definitely a different experience when you, kind of like how they said, you see these people, but you're not really relating. I'll say it like, when we started moving the furniture in, I was just moving furniture into a place. Yeah. But then when the ministry grew and we started to spend time with them, I'm like, there's actually people associated with this home now.
You humanize them.
Yes,
you humanize them. It wasn't just a job anymore.
Exactly. So I'm sitting there, and they're just bringing out tea, and, they just want to talk with us, and, we have, people translating, and we're just having a good time, and I'm sitting on this couch, and I'm like, this is my couch that was just at my house, or I remember moving this couch, and, just going through all that, but I just couldn't believe how welcoming they were to us, because I don't know if I was in that same situation, if I would feel ashamed, or like, I just want to be closed off, but they were very awesome people. So we'd have tea and hang out with them. But I used to love hanging out with the kids because in the neighborhoods, there was just a whole bunch of kids. And I like to play soccer. And so every kid in the neighborhood was just kicking a ball in the middle of the parking lot there, just playing soccer. And so it kind of grew our, you know, relationship, you know, just through different ways that were just so small and minute, but that made us, you know, we related to, you know, we're human in so many ways, but we think that we're different, but we're actually alike.
It's amazing, isn't it, that when we are just human beings and meet people where they are, mm-hmm. we realize how much we have that's alike.
In common, yeah.
And we are unalike. Because when you think of refugees, you're thinking about someone coming from a different land.
Yeah.
They have different mores, different habits, different customs, different mm-hmm. foods. We're human beings.
Yes.
And human beings need warmth and they need
yes.
relationships and they need to feel that someone cares. And so it's an amazing ministry that you've been involved in, pulled into this, mm-hmm.
yes.
this stone soup.
It's been growing so much, and that's what really, you know, kept me in it, you know, like I was saying. But it is definitely an amazing ministry.
So for each of you, if you can just tell us briefly what this has meant to you and how this ministry has changed your experience. Mm-hmm. You know, what has it done for you personally?
Yeah, I think of the Bible verse where John starts out the gospel and says, and the word became flesh.
Yes.
And I think we need to have that connection in our Christian faith where the word that we hear is also the word that we live. And so for me, it's been an opportunity to connect the word with my faith. And we're so connected in technology. We're the most connected, probably, civilization ever. Mm. But we should never let our technology surpass our humanity.
Mm. Yes.
That even though we're connected technologically, we need to be connected person to person. So this has provided an opportunity to do that.
What I'm hearing you say, Pastor, is that actually it's made the Word of God come alive mm-hmm. in your own life.
Yeah.
That sometimes we have all these philosophies and all these right. theories in our mind, even as Christians. But right. when we actually get to do it and mm-hmm. get to connect with people, we really begin to see what Jesus was talking about.
Yeah, a quote that I love is, the longest distance in the universe is between the head and the heart.
Yes.
That being able to connect the head and the heart, the theology with practical service, you know, the Good Samaritan, who is your neighbor? Essentially, who is our neighbor? Anyone that needs our help.
Absolutely. And how about you, Hannah? How has this impacted your life personally and your spiritual life, perhaps?
Well, I put myself in their place because I came to this country in the late 60s. My dad came to go to school at UNC in Chapel Hill to do his graduate school. And we were given a host family. All graduate students were given a host family. And I thought, what a difference that made in my parents' lives and my life. And she just took us into her home and made us feel so welcome. Mm. So I know how it is to be in a foreign country. We did speak English. That's the advantage we had. So when I go visit some of my Syrian refugee friends, I sit with them, I talk to them. They're just like us. They have the same concerns we have. And I, most of the time, the women are at home. So I take them to gardens so that they see a little bit of the place around them. It's just connecting on a personal level and just to know that the same concerns she may have with her kids, I have for mine as well.
So human beings are humans.
Human beings are human
yeah.
beings, no matter where they're from.
Your mother, if your wife, you know, you're
Absolutely.
Thinking about your,
yeah.
your spouse, you're thinking about your children.
I think we yeah. can't stress exactly. that yeah. enough. Mm-hmm. And the fact that these are real people. I mean, mm-hmm. I even feel strange saying these mm-hmm. are real people. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all people. Mm-hmm. And people bleed the same mm-hmm. color blood,
yes. mm-hmm.
you know? And so, yes, if you're concerned about your child, then chances are she would be concerned about her child
exactly.
as well, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe even more so as we see the stories of these families that are being separated from each other. So it's just not that difficult, I think, as we try to make the point to our audience, our viewing audience around the world, because this is an issue everywhere as we look at all these different countries now who are taking in refugees. And the fear and the mm-hmm. ostracization, the marginalization of these families. Mm-hmm. So just the humanness of it, I think, is really important. Russ, mm-hmm. share with us your experience and how it's changed you.
Oh, well, how long do I have?
You have exactly 45 seconds.
Well, you know, there's so much to be said. But, you know, as they said, you know, these people are coming here, and the first people they see are people from the church. And so their perspective changed, you know, and also their perspective changed, but my perspective changed of these people. And so when I look at their kids, I'm like, this is the next generation of Americans. You know, this is what it looks like, you know, when we, you know, just talking with them. But it definitely changed my view and made me understand how feet on the ground are so important.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for sharing with us. And thank you for the work that you're doing. So we also want to thank you for watching. And please watch more of Real Family Talk. Please visit our website listed on your screen and share your thoughts with us on Facebook and Twitter.
That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll talk more about strengthening families and inspiring hope.